Welcome back to the Vulture Club. Every week we delve into all the latest pop culture issues, obsess over the celeb rants we can't look away from, and discuss what's getting on our collective tits. So coming up on this week's episode, with the arrival of Amazon's Falling for a Killer by Trish Wood, we ask, have we reached peak Bundy? Later in the show, I'm joined by Rogue contributor and author Leah Hines to discuss her monthly column Anon, in which she tells the stories of women who, for reasons of safety, sanity, or simply preference, wish to remain anonymous. Plus, we chat what we're bet into and what we want to bin from the world of TV, films, books, and pop culture. But first, come again. Have you caught stoned off me?
Totally. We're both like, fucking shit.
Fucking
sweet. Yeah, we both are. We're both like, so. It's the room, I think, as well. And do you know what it is? That
fucking gas. Like,
yes, what it's giving it? Off kind Diffuser. Of vape vibes.
Yeah. We're in like.
Man, I feel so chill.
I know.
My eyes are all fuzzy and out of focus. I've caught it.
You've totally got a contact high. For full disclosure, I've just breastfed a baby, and my God.
If you've ever breastfed anyone or
suck
anything.
Suck on those fumes. It's extremely potent, somebody especially for me.
Somebody sent me, if you know us, you might listen to Creep Dive 2, that's our other podcast. It's much creepier. But somebody sent me a video of a dog, someone breastfeeding a puppy. I haven't opened it yet. It's just the title, but I'm dying to get it. Because it took me a while. I was like, is it possible? Then I was like, of course it is. It's nipples. Nipples are the same.
I'm out of tea.
No, it's a puppy. They don't have teeth yet.
Oh, do they not?
No.
Oh, I'd breastfeed that thing.
Yeah, you see?
I'd give anything a go right now just to get this flowing. Just to get
if you wouldn't mind, Sophie, actually, I'm parched.
Okay, I've got this week's come again. So it's actually a come a Gwyneth.
Okay.
Because Gwyneth's been doing stuff again this week, and we do enjoy when she does things.
This thing is so... Come on. What the fuck is this thing?
It's very empowering.
Come on. Give it to us empowered? Between the eyes.
Okay,
not sure.
So basically, her new empowerment kick is the no makeup party. So Gwyneth invited some of her friends over for an elite soiree. Just conditional on the fact that all of the beautiful A-list attendees come barefaced and ready to celebrate themselves as they are.
Sophie, you do know what's happening here.
We're having a no makeup party right now, but we don't even know it. Didn't even realize we were doing
sorry,
it.
Sorry, fuck you. I'm wearing a full face of makeup. but what I was going to say is, Gwyneth is trolling us.
She's.
And. That's of course what she's doing.
She's been at it, I'm telling you, for 2 decades.
She sold us a vagina candle. She's sold out of that
she
scent.
She sold out of it.
She's doing brilliantly.
She is amazing. She is like culture jamming. Do you remember this? This was like a big thing in the art world in like the late 90s, 2000s. Where like there was these artists called the Yes Men. Do you remember that? No. And they used to like dress up as kind of corporations and go around playing like these kind of elaborate hoaxes.
And up and coming artists.
Yeah. No. They were artists.
Oh.
But they used to play the elaborate hoaxes on like big kind of evil global conglomerates and stuff like that. And it was called culture jamming, basically. And like I'm telling you. She's doing some kind of like post-capitalist
irony.
Version.
And we're all falling into the trap.
Yeah.
And I've read articles, outrage, and, you know, going in-depth photographs of one of the, you know, that you're one who used to be the stylist
everyone
to all the very
beautiful
skinny.
At the party, but a bit wan.
But like, look.
Know? Do you know what it was? It was actually jarring to the eyes because everyone had stunning, deadly outfits on.
Yeah.
And you just were
and
like...
And what about the filler and Botox?
Yeah, I know.
And like tattooed lip liners and fake eyebrows and all.
It was so great because she'd posted some pics on her Instagram, on Gwyneth's Instagram, being like, you know, just had the no makeup party. It is worth noting that guests were allowed, if they wished, to enhance their glow using...
Her
Paltrow's latest goop
Boom.
Product.
It's
a
an
hyaluronic acid and vitamin C infused serum.
Twas an advertisement.
So
and
that
it's
was
done
an option.
Fucking brilliantly. And now we're here talking about her fucking hyaluronic serum to shove up your hole in order to look like
I
these
only
makeup.
Want it if it's pussy these. Scented. I'm sorry. I'm not putting anything on my face that doesn't smell like your vagina, Gwen.
Well, at the moment... At the moment.
But you know what everyone noted immediately?
What?
That one of the pictures she put on Instagram, Rachel Zoe, the stylist.
Oh, yeah. Was wearing eyeliner.
Wearing eyeliner.
Like, of all the makeups, it's the most obvious makeups.
Jesus, your one in the middle is rebelling. Anyway, look, do you think that we need to have no makeup parties to help us feel better about ourselves? Oh,
I think we need to stop talking about Gwyneth Paltrow and lining her pockets.
You're such a bullshitter. You announced that you wanted to talk about Gwyneth every week, regardless of what she was doing.
I've just come now into the realization that I've fallen into a trap.
Yeah.
But what do you think we should need to have? No, it's that. See, I think totally it's ridiculous. And I think they're all knowingly being ridiculous.
It's like you said, it's so disingenuous because you've just got really, really high quality filler, Botox, whatever. So why bother peddling this?
Do you know who's still like a ride?
There's a few people at that though.
Demi Moore. I thought, and I mean, I know she's been doing aerosols for years. And I'm not sure whether that has got something to do with her skin, hair and nails. But whatever it is.
She looks incredible.
Those whippets. But they're all looking great. But like the thing is, it's all surgically enhanced. So if you're looking at these girls and you're thinking, all I need to do here is buy this €900 bit of fucking, you know, foreskin from a child, rub it on the face of my own child, take the secretions from my baby's bum, move it to my face, stand out under the moonlit sun, get onto a sunbed, get off a sunbed, have a shower, and Bob's your uncle. Now you're sadly mistaken.
And you can go to the no makeup party with Kate Hudson and feel really good about yourself.
What you need to do is go to a doctor. A surgical doctor. And then they will make you
ready for the no makeup party.
Yes. I think that's all fine. But also, they don't owe us anything. Why do they fucking owe us?
They don't owe us anything. You're absolutely right. I do think it's just funny that, look, all this no makeup selfie thing and everything that's been going on for years, like, it is a bit of a weird area. Because it's kind of, like, why... Oh, so-and-so goes makeup free.
That's a problem. It's a problem. That's problematic. Yeah. That I'm being triggered. Like, that's terrible. That's a terrible, terrible misuse of that word.
It's terrible.
I mean, when you think of brave, you're thinking Joan of Arc.
No, but nowadays...
She would be turning in her medieval grave.
She definitely was burned at the stake.
She would be...
She got a grave.
Those individual cremated ashes.
Rustling.
Wherever they are.
They're very agitated.
They're being agitated somewhere. That's true.
That's the sound of Joan of Arc's ashes rustling indignantly and being like, brave?
You think
bitches,
that's brave?
We didn't have hyaluronic acid and our whole lives were a no makeup party.
But they all died before they were 35, so they were all beautiful.
Incredible's gone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think the thing that kind of bugs me a lot about it is, though, having had a heavy reliance on makeup forever, practically, because of bad skin, really irritates me when people don't acknowledge that, look, sometimes it is very hard to like let go of the base.
But the buttery biscuit base. That buttery biscuity base of
the
BB
base of covering my adult acne. And I'm like looking at all these women and I'm like, well, none of you have
bad skin in any way.
And you don't even know, like, do you know the way when you have bad skin, like, people definitely really notice it. It is one of the real crushing kind of body kind of beauty things that you do feel very like,
well, you
kind
can't
of a
just
connotation of like you're dirty or there's something you're doing that you're not. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So I'm always like, you know, you're making that big of a leap here. Exactly. You've had all the intervention. Top notch stuff. Good work, ladies.
On the other hand, so I'm sort of happy to be talking about women in their 50s and 60s.
Well, that is true.
I'm kind of happy that there's now we're sort of talking. Isn't it true?
That they're
we're looking
allowed,
at them.
That they're allowed. Full stop. They're just now allowed.
To be.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Good to see them.
So, big week for me. I had a baby. on Monday, and I spent the next 48 hours on the ward in Hollis Street consuming Ted Bundy content. As you fucking do.
We're coming to you from Sophie's attic. Somebody's taken the newborn away. Congratulations, Sophie.
Thank you.
Baby number three.
Yeah, the old spell in Harlow Street gave me the opportunity to really, really catch up on exactly where we are now in the Ted Bundy canon. And it is a canon. There is now a whole, it's a genre of work in and of its own self, Ted Bundy content.
Well,
so
this has been the most recent content, the Amazon Prime series.
It's kicked us off.
Has been Amazon's my most favourite to date.
Falling for a Killer.
Absolutely brilliant.
It's by Trish Wood, female director. No, it's the first time in the like TV series kind of realm that a woman's taken on the story.
And you can tell.
It's so obvious. And it's amazing.
Yeah. It's the fresh new perspective. The stuff you think you've heard it all, but you haven't.
It's basically it's a 5-part kind of standalone series. And it's really, really, it unfolds so well. She's meticulous about sort of the culture of the time. She is completely decentering Ted Bundy himself for the first time ever in any Ted Bundy story. He is not
the
main
hero
character.
Yeah.
And it is a friggin' bloody breath of fresh air.
Totally. Because throughout all of the other documentaries, well, I don't know about you, but I would have watched about him. Mm. The question for me was, and what about this, first of all, the girlfriend that they sort of made reference to, who remained his girlfriend through the murders and then through part of the court cases.
Yeah.
What about his family?
What about his
father? What about all the interesting shit like that? What about the victims? Jesus, I mean, that was just never, it was just a body count. It was never,
they were like
barely
lists
names.
Of names. Yeah. And so what Trish Wood basically does is she has kind of completely erased Ted Bundy from the narrative, virtually, and instead picks up all the threads of all the stories via the women. And so she goes to kind of say the college campuses that he was kind of like hunting at. And we get like a bit of story about like George Ann Hawkins, who is an early victim, coming to college and what her aspirations were, interviews with her friends and roommates, basically finally getting beyond just that kind of black and white picture of her with the flower in her hair that we know, and it's an iconic image, but it's been completely like flattened and they've made two-dimensional.
Yeah.
Because it's always been viewed through the kind of prism of she was a victim of Ted Bundy, full stop. That was her story.
Desperate.
So instead, Trish Wood completely flips it and she just tells all of these fascinating stories all around the time, around the victims.
Yeah. What it gives
and
you...
And the girlfriend, of course.
This, like, speaking of... It gives you also a three-dimensional view of Bundy. And an understanding then, when you're looking back at how he was sort of capturing his victims and luring them into vans or just taking them off, or they were getting into cars with him. And you sort of, you know, we were all up to date with the fact that he was a great manipulator. He was an attractive young guy. Mm. He didn't look anything like what we sort of imagine when
he was
we think
a Republican,
of a serial killer.
A young Republican.
Well, you know, somewhat, almost a lawyer. Smart-ish.
Very-ish. I think always massive, has much has been made of like how intelligent.
I agree.
And how charismatic.
Yeah, it you have to look at it in context.
Totally.
The time that it was, the women's liberation movement. That I thought was an interesting take. You remember, you know, the way there was, we were working through history and contextualizing all of the murders and who he was. Mm. And she tipped against the women's lib movement, which was obviously in full swing. And it was in full swing sort of at the end of it. And like there was huge empowerment for women at the time, big freedom. You know, it was that we were after the 60s. So the sexual revolution had happened. We were sort of entering the kind of political revolution, the female political revolution, really.
Yeah.
And so there was this huge surge of confidence. And it happened right at that precipice moment.
Mm.
And it just killed it. You know, pardon the... But it
killed the vibe.
It just, yeah,
such
killed the
buzz. Killer, Ted. Jesus.
But, you know, and thinking now of the fact that he was a Republican and... It smacks of, you know, exactly how when we look at things culturally, there will often be a swing back in the opposite direction or some big event that will sort of stop people in their tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like say,
Trump,
the Manson. Okay, this is very simplified, but the Manson murders coming at the end of the 60s. and kind of killing the hippie dream.
Yeah, so there obviously was this appetite.
Like highly reductive.
There was always an appetite for the kind of opposite of whatever is trending currently. Mm. Not that that Ted was like,
there's a crest of a wave here. I'm going to be the counterculture and
I know
absolutely destroy women instead.
But that's what was interesting. We were trying to kind of the
but
whole
he was
way
a product
through
of that time.
Sure.
And I thought the point that one of the interviews was making about like the kind of the comedy on TV at the time, where there was like one TV show where there was like just a kind of an unending running joke about this
beating
guy
your wife up.
Beating his wife up.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
It was like really chilling to hear that and kind of in the context of this story and be like, oh, like
that's what people
was the
were
generation
watching
that birthed Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Just completely normalizing you know, all of that kind of misogyny.
I guess. And you're wondering like what kind of was what was sort of was that here we go.
Like, was he that conscious
we've
of
just
it?
We're now talking
about
all
him.
Of the look, whatever, it's interesting. But what, like, where did it begin for him? Do you remember? I can't remember what the last big series on Bundy was. It was a Netflix series.
There was two last year. Yeah. And they were by the same guy, Joe Berlinger. He did the Netflix Conversations with a Killer. And he did the Zac Efron movie.
What?
They were both out last year. This is what I mean by the Ted Bundy canon, which I've been steeped in this week. So basically, they did a kind of a Zac Efron Bundy vehicle that was called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. And it was Zac Efron playing Bundy, Lily Collins playing Elizabeth Kendall.
That's girlfriend.
Yeah, that's his longtime girlfriend. That's her kind of assumed name. And this is interesting because this guy, Joe Berlinger, who chose to tell this story in two different ways in the same year, he based this film on her book, but like initially didn't buy the rights.
What?
Had no conversations with her. It was only like when it was quite a bit through production that she heard that they were telling this story and it was the story of their relationship. And then she found out that he had used her memoir as a source material without any conversations. And I was like, wow.
That's obviously
like
what drove her to agree to the Amazon Prime show.
Like, you're making a film of this person's life and you're literally, it's all about disempowering women and destroying women. And you are now taking a woman's story without her knowledge or consent. Sorry, not a good look for you, Joe Berlinger.
No.
And film-wise, I'm very torn about it. I just watched it.
And?
I thought Zac Efron was brilliant. But brilliant because it was shallow. It was a mask person.
Mm.
But it's quite a disjointed narrative. Like, they really skip around a lot. And again, there is, like, focus on, like, women as in the girlfriend story, somewhat.
How accurate did they, having watched then the Prime show...
Yeah, it's quite it's accurate.
It's accurate in a really heartbreaking
way.
But
I think they were quite unfair to her, to Elizabeth Kendall. Like, you don't discover to the very end that she was actually the one who turned him in.
Now, and you do discover through the Amazon Prime show that she attempted to fucking turn him in many times.
Mm.
So many times that wasn't her dad a member of the police force? And she had said to her dad, who was a detective, look, I feel like Ted might be the Ted they're looking for.
Yeah.
And her dad said, shut up.
He said, that could ruin Ted's reputation.
So,
which we have heard
I know.
Over and over and over. Men's reputations are more important than women's
lives.
Fucking experiences and lives.
So she got rebuffed by her dad.
Yeah. So she'd approached two different male detectives.
That's right.
Then she tried her dad.
She's
basically imploring her dad to come with her to the detectives.
That's right.
So that they would listen to her. Yes.
So didn't she call? What happened then? Who eventually did
listen to
her? She
discovered that there was a female detective.
Okay.
Involved in the
case.
Oh,
that's right.
And
yeah.
She rang and requested to speak to the woman detective. And that's kind of sort of where it started. But like, it is a complex kind of unfurling of narrative.
Meanwhile,
but I think
she throughout that period though, she was
with him.
With him in a boyfriend girlfriend sense. Now, you got the feeling from watching it. It was they weren't physically together through a lot of this sort of relationship. I felt like
Like she was in Seattle.
She was sort of moved down describing him as boyfriend and girlfriend.
Long distance.
Yeah. And it felt a bit, look, controversial. It was definitely dysfunctional. Mm. But I felt desperately sorry for her. Mm. But then, and upon interviews with her daughter, it started to become sort of fucking angry then with her through watching it.
For kind of being passive.
Well, I guess because she had kind of been continuously trying to turn him in. Mm. And for whatever reason, she couldn't break the relationship. The bond was too strong. So after having kind of thought to herself, this could be him. Oh, this is definitely him. I'm going to start telling people it's him. Mm. But then to continue the relationship on, I don't know, felt she was a sort of sad character.
Definitely. I feel like he's a bit of a psychic vampire. And I feel like he kind of very much
identified her as
a good person.
She was total mark.
To bring in here and be his front for normality. Mm. And she was a single mother. And so she was already at a disadvantage in the culture.
Yeah.
So it was actually
easy,
fucking ideal.
Yeah.
Like basically society put her there,
yeah,
relegated her, and he preyed on her.
Yeah, I guess
and so. And then like he had the second kind of big relationship is with Carol Ann.
She's another...
Carol Ann Brownlee?
I can't remember her full name, but yes, absolutely. She appeared... They had worked together.
Yeah.
For a brief time. So I think... She then began appearing at his court cases, and then he was sentenced to death for the killings of, I can't remember how many people. And then the second court case was the killing of his youngest victim, a 12-year-old girl right outside her house, or sorry, her school. He picked her up. Mm. And then the gall of the incident at this child's murder trial when he then proposes to Carol Ann. Is it Carol Ann?
It's Carol Ann Boone.
Well,
she's in the witness box.
Sure,
and
he's behaving
as representing
his own legal counsel, and he's interviewing her as a character witness for himself.
Yeah,
and he fucking proposes.
Oh yeah,
it's
and declares them married, which in Florida is legally binding if you do it in front of a judge. But say in that case where they were in Florida, and obviously he was up for capital punishment in Florida, and. The judge, like all the language,
just gross.
Was so bizarre. The judge
fell in love with him.
Constantly called him partner,
sir.
In the final, in the judge's final kind of thoughts, I was like Jerry Springer's like thought of the day. What's that called in court? He did his Jerry Springer bit, and it was like he was like, I'm just mourning the kind of waste of humanity I've witnessed here.
Yeah,
and take care of yourself,
he
partner.
He was
under the sway as well.
Yes.
It was so bizarre.
But he committed him to die.
Yeah. But like, well, the jury did.
Sure, but like the judge can stop that. But he committed him to death and then proceeded to give him a glowing recommendation.
You would have
so
made an excellent
weird.
Lawyer. Like,
it was wild.
It's
so disappointing.
Not to turn
so
everything
sad.
Into this, but like it really does make me just go, like, God, like men just really have such a low bar to hit. Like if Ted Bundy's getting commended for being a good lawyer by the judge, he's
but this what if they decided that Ted is a sociopath? I'm not sure. Whatever.
What
he
is it?
But
it's a disgusting creature.
Also, you know. Some females display these tendencies too.
You are right. Yes.
So this is kind of a situation where, in context, now not suggesting it would be any different now, things may not have changed, but it makes sense in the time that it was happening that people were behaving this way to a white, educated, middle-class male. I mean,
absolutely.
In America
Such a
at
good
the
point.
Time.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's right that we're looking back on it fucking horrified. That's the right reaction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The relationship and the victim of the girlfriend, Elizabeth, I think is the takeaway here from the saddest example of a, you know, an abusive relation,
kind of
emotionally abusive relationship.
Emotionally hostage taking,
yeah,
isn't it?
Totally. The daughter being interviewed was holding back a lot of what, you know, you could feel her restraint and frustration towards the mother who clearly was like vibrating with
the grief.
Yeah. And feelings for him and, you know, it was just clear that she was not, had not moved past this and never will, and is a victim and will remain that. And I did feel it was exploitative. I just felt like it was, it's not going to do that little family any good. This, I didn't feel like
they were getting much healing from it.
No, not really. But, and I understand then why they had never agreed to do anything. And then maybe on the back of this film and having not been...
Yeah, like not really been given the opportunity to kind of shape that.
Maybe they felt this was their opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, as in, I think they... I was left with an impression of like two women who'd like really courageously kind of continued on, carried on. Do you know that kind of way? I felt that about a lot of the women who spoke on it.
To me, they just looked like two survivors just hanging in there by a fucking thread.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, great. Now we all know what you look like. Fucked.
Well, yeah. I mean, she had written the book and things like that. She'd written the book a good long time ago. I think, do you know what I was thinking about with it though? Do you know the way the true crime kind of explosion has been, there's a lot of talk about how it's very much the audience is female and like why are women so into these stories and things like that. And it got me thinking about how like it's literally the main kind of genre where women get to actually see and hear about women.
Oh.
And how fucking depressing is that?
What do you mean now? But we get to see and hear real experiences from real women speaking honestly?
And there's just literally a lot of women in these stories.
Gotcha, because it's usually 90% of the time it's women are the victims.
Yeah.
How interesting. Okay.
I was thinking, so say Seb and I, when we were talking about like what to watch, and he'll be like, oh, do you want to watch? Oh, I heard... Now I can't think of a film. Moneyball. I heard Moneyball was good. And I was like, I'm always like, okay, here are the women in it. Because, you know... 8 times out of 10. Exactly. Are there any women? Will there be one? Will there be two maybe? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's, I was like, that's why women love true crime. It's our literally our opportunity to see our stories.
Jesus.
And how
Sophie, that's
grim
so depressing.
Is that?
Depressing.
Completely.
Or
have I depressed
think,
us thoroughly?
I think it's because they're your ultimate fears, right? And often... Where it's like an explosion therapy that we're
exposure
all going.
Therapy,
exposure
yeah.
therapy. So we're all like tipping against it, trying to kind of formulate a plan if we were in those situations.
Boys, yeah.
Like hearing about, okay, survivor stories. What did she... And again, it's depressing
yeah.
to think about it like that. But for me, I think that's my approach. I come at it like in a studious kind of fashion.
Yeah,
I'm
you're
like,
kind
I need
of
to know
doing
everything
an analysis.
In the lead up to this event.
How
and
did
then
I survive?
How the escape happened and who to trust. And
yeah.
Very interesting. Anyway.
I think, anyway, watching a man's treatment and a woman's treatment of the same thing this week, all in very, like, close proximity. Like, I finished the Zac Efron version earlier today. And that was, like, so devoid of victims and victim stories and victims' voices. Mm. It was shocking. Like, it was, it felt like a glaring omission.
But
and
Zac Efron was
Zac
pretty good.
Zac Efron was very good. He's really grown into himself. glow up. Like, a very nice glow up there. But... The victims' names were literally relegated to a footnote and it felt like a fuck you.
Did they do a...
They literally
I love the
a title card with the list of names, not even pictures or anything.
Oh, shit. I like the when they do the victim picture kind of montage. Like the collage of misery.
Just
and they zoom in and out. I like that.
The Ken Burns.
Absolutely.
Just drifting across
slow,
the pics.
Slow, kind of out of focus. And yeah.
Well,
anyway, that's interesting. Thanks for that.
Definitely
recommend?
Worth, I recommend. Do you know two people I can't actually ever fucking believe are two different people and I constantly confuse them? Zac Efron and Justin Bieber.
Stop. Now, okay. Have we finished our section?
We've finished our section.
What's,
I'm like,
what's
I'm
our next section?
Segue.
Okay, good. No, I'm ready. I'm on. I've got
whole
my helmet
way
on.
Through Extremely Wicked, the movie, I was like, God, Justin Bieber is a really fine actor.
You're totally right. What do they call them when you can sing, dance, and
oh,
sing?
Oh, triple threat.
Sing, dance, and what's the third?
Sing, dance,
B.
And act.
Act. B.
Yeah.
B.
Simply
sing
B.
and dance.
It's the Neil Patrick Harris triple threat.
Yeah, it's the same shit. They're like Disney characters, but brought to life in different ways. Now in their elderly years, they're behaving, you know, they're playing
they're
serial killers.
Actors.
Stop now. We just talked. Justin, we need to talk about Justin Bieber for a few reasons. I've been sucked down the YouTube fucking whatever it is. documentary series of Justin Bieber and his new wife. They look like two identical people, one with long blonde hair, one with a mustache. Now they're married. I can't. Hailey Baldwin. Hailey Baldwin and Justin Bieber. As small snippets of the most bizarre real life documentary. It's fucking bizarre.
And they're on YouTube with it.
Yeah.
Not so even like.
This is all to attract us in to pay YouTube for the monthly subscription. So I don't know whether they're going to hold back the last episode and that will be enough to sign people up, or why they're giving it to us for free. Anyway, the production values are insane. It looks extremely expensive, the whole thing. Very short episodes. It's terrible.
That's a put it in the bin.
Justin Bieber, very childlike, girlish, kind of squeaky, you know, quite upset. Seems a little upset through the whole show.
Jesus.
Well, just in kind of a low level, kind of sort of always bottom lip shaking.
A quiver. Much like my new child.
Fucking bizarre. And then this Billie Eilish event that happened.
Oh, yes. Okay. So to bring us up to speed, because this is like, this week we learned that Justin Bieber is incredibly
sad.
Incredibly
emotional.
Sincerely emotional about Billie Eilish.
We're all emotional about Billie Eilish.
Are you going to play a little bit?
Well, sure.
Do it.
So. Like the pictures of him at the moment. I'm not going to say he looks like a pedophile, but I'm not going to say he doesn't.
You know, let her do her thing, and if she ever needs me, I'm going to be here for her, but...
He's wiping tears away.
Moments because people take for granted encounters and...
What the fuck is happening here? So he's become very upset talking about Billie Eilish, a teenage star who's doing extremely well. Is this him sort of trying to take the shine away from... Is this an attempt... Is this a Kanye West weird emotional attack?
Insert myself into another a young woman's story.
Fucking young
and
woman.
Her moment.
She's 17. She's just won like 9 Grammys. She's doing fucking brilliantly. Meanwhile... your man's been growing a mustache for the last 12 months and has a YouTube show where he's holding hands with his wife for 7 minutes every day. I'm presuming that's what's happening. Or he's probably on a lot of drugs.
I think he's doing a kind of like, I'm an older seasoned star. I've been beaten down by this system and I'm here for her whenever she needs me.
He's got that disease as well.
Do you remember when they
did
it for...
Sorry, do you remember the tick? He's got the tick, the disease.
Lyme disease.
Desperately sad.
We should never talk about diseases because like there's no shit about
Listen,
whatever.
Listen, the thing about Lyme's is it seems to only attack very rich Americans who are famous. And it's a fucking plague on them at the moment. I don't know how they're all frequenting areas of heavy tick. What are they all doing? I mean, how many ticks would you find in an LA mansion? It's weird, isn't it? Maybe they're kind of trying to be more real and therefore visiting kind of, you know, roll around in the hay areas, you know, living in tents to try
they're
and reconnect with a chakra. Meanwhile.
Feel like, is it a goop experiment kind of has infiltrated?
Do you remember when you were in school?
That would be a real money spinner for them.
It's trending.
Yeah, like a kind of an elite tick.
Yes, that's what's fucking happening
Billie
here.
Billie Eilish did share the interview.
She also has Lyme disease.
And she... Also shared all her tics.
Get it? Because of her hair? Her green
Lyme.
Hair?
Oh, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I didn't. There's a lot of
I only
I'm not
got
getting
it over
moment.
After I had said it.
Billie Eilish shared the interview along with all the pics of her, like, Justin Bieber memorabilia from her teens and
That's,
stuff.
Again, don't you find that a little odd? There's something so weird about that. Maybe I'm being shitty.
He's got a lot of feelings, as you said. He definitely seems to be having kind of a bit of a weird time with this this wedding and the reality series. Like,
It's the child star thing. Here we go again,
yeah,
lads.
It looks
what
like
have we
a
learned?
Little bit of a kind of.
Are you going to say breakdown?
I was going to say a bit of an implosion, maybe. But yeah.
Well, that's sad for him, but I think it's probably a lot to do with the Lyme disease. It's taken them out left, right and centre. Do you remember it took out a whole cast of the new Housewives of New York or something? It did. It took them all out. They're all having cryogenically, freezing. They're all getting into these cryotherapy situation. And then they all got diagnosed with Lyme at the following episode.
Oh, God. Oh, damn you. You've now implanted this fucking tick of an idea in my head. And I'm going to be like self-diagnosing Lyme disease
tomorrow. No, you're nowhere near rich enough for that. Are you insane? Anyway,
he's got a lot of feelings about Billie Eilish. Is it?
It's Billie Eilish.
Just a bit of a grab.
Sorry. Yeah.
Publicity.
I
because
don't know.
She's.
Whatever.
Beyond mega hot. It's. I'll be honest, baffling to me. But
I'd say she's physically quite warm too, because she's
piling on the clothes.
She's piling on that gear, and I hit. She's looking a lot like how I would have looked at 17. No, me and you swimming in our jeans and t-shirts.
Yeah,
that's Billie Eilish.
I am so excited by her style.
Yeah.
In that, okay, obviously visually, I'm repelled by it. It's everything I hate.
But that's interesting.
But
why?
I love. That we've never seen an inch of her.
I love it too. Yeah. Me too. It's
fucking
so amazing.
It's really cool. And I wish we had more of that when we were
me
that
too.
Age.
Me too. That's one thing I look back and think of. We could have really done with a bit of Billie back then.
Absolutely.
In the kind of 90s, late 90s.
And even like the 90s were not like even as dire as it then gets. But because you know, like All Saints were allowed to have baggy pants.
But they
but
must
no
have
tops.
Been... You must show.
They were never given a top.
A bosom.
Between them.
Not at
not
all.
Not a top.
Just, it was a string top.
It was literally a string.
Tank.
Booblet. It just was a single string just draped across their nipples.
Threaded through two nipple rings.
Around a nipple. So I am very, very stoked for the fact that Billie gets to wear all her clothes.
Mm.
I think it's
and you
very
know what?
Cool.
Back off, Bieber.
And I do fucking like her. I do. I don't get like 5 Grammy winner.
Why not?
Billie
it's absolutely
Eilish.
Amazing.
But I like her.
Ah, look, she's doing great. That's great for her.
She's really, yeah.
Bieber. Back off.
Coming up next, we're welcoming Rogue contributor, journalist and author Liadhan Hynes to the Vulture Club to give us a bit of insight into her recurring series on Rogue Collective, simply called Anon. Leah, welcome.
Hi, Soph. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. I suppose a pertinent thing with your column Anon is the quote that you lead each week with, which is from Virginia Woolf, and it says, "I would venture to guess that Anon, who wrote so many poems without signing them, was often a woman." So can you tell us a bit about what you want to explore with Anon?
Okay, so like you said, Anon is a monthly column that we'll be running on Rogue, and I will interview a woman each month anonymously, and she'll tell me her story. What I wanted to do was, I feel like we're in a time where women are speaking out about things that they maybe didn't before, and that's really increasing. But I felt that there were things that women might never be able to speak about openly and put their name to. Sometimes for very valid reasons. They might be protecting themselves. They might be protecting their children. They may not be able to give the full truth of a situation because it might not be appropriate. It might be a work situation where they feel like their career could be in danger and they might not feel able to speak about it. And then there might be just things that are just personal that they just don't necessarily want to put their name to, but that these things can be helpful to other women if they tell the story. I read the book, as you know, She Said, story of the two New York Times journalists, Megan Toohey and Jodi Kantor, who broke the Harvey Weinstein story. And in that book, one of the things that becomes really clear is that it's so clear to us now that, you know, he was a monster and there were all these women. But at the time, before they broke the story, they didn't know. The women themselves didn't know that there were all these other victims.
Totally, yeah.
They're all off in their own isolated cells. Even though you hear people saying, oh, there were always rumours, but they really didn't know. You really get that sense.
And you also don't know who's going to step up behind you.
That's the other thing. There's a scene in the book where, for example, they're talking to Gwyneth Paltrow and she's saying, I just want somebody else to jump with me. All of the women say, I don't want to go alone. Mm. And at the time, she's just had the Jade Egg vagina scandal and she's saying, I don't want to compromise my business. I don't want this to become about me and just be this big scandal about me. They can't say to her that they're simultaneously talking to Ashley Judd, another A-list actress. So they've got all these women completely. And then there was the legal system as well was kind of shutting them down by encouraging people to sign agreements where they couldn't speak. So that was kind of colluding. So that really struck me. And that idea that, you know, there are all these women, but they don't know that they exist, and all these stories that then when we share them. The other thing about that book, they go on to tell the story of Christine Blasey Ford, who spoke out with allegations about Justice Kavanaugh. Mm. And in her part of the book, you see the toll that it takes. So she is alone. One other woman comes up right at the end, but they don't really go into that. So she's on her own, and she is in the middle of an absolute shitstorm that kind of unfolds almost without, like, she so innocently starts off saying, maybe I'll just ring his family and say, God, look, this happened, and probably best if you don't. You know, she goes, she kind of, it kind of snowballs. So that was the other thing I felt, that, you know, there's this kind of burden sometimes on women to tell our stories in order to kind of further our cause.
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely brilliant if you want to do that. And, you know, I write about divorce and separation, and it doesn't take it out of me to write personal stuff, but there's absolutely no kind of onus on people to do it, you know, and there can be a real burden.
And it's interesting, like, there's another piece on site from a couple of weeks ago where our contributor Taryn Devere spoke about the kind of aftermath of Repeal the Eighth, and kind of, you know, obviously so many women kind of trawled their trauma and kind of plumbed the depths of it to, you know, just kind of just beseechingly actually plead with people to see, you know, their experience and to kind of
see
obviously
what that means
and hopefully
and
make a decision for the good of the society.
Exactly. And Taryn writes it so beautifully, the toll that took on her, that it's almost like reliving a trauma. Mm. And so that was in my mind as well when I thought that it would be great for us to create this space. And I'm finding that because I started with a big list of women who, you know, I would find that in interviews a lot as well, that there would be stuff that we couldn't cover, you know. And sometimes it might be just even like a tiny little vignette. Like, it doesn't need to be this whole story. It can be just one little bit of experience that, you know, comes up that captures just a moment or a feeling. Obviously, our first one was a woman who had dealt with, we called it the difficult man, and she was dealing with a very difficult kind of aggressive personality, and it escalated into him taking to Twitter. And it was that idea of, like, she kind of starts out knowing he was difficult, but feeling like, well, I can manage him, you know, and I can deal with this. And almost taking that on as, like, it would be her failure if she couldn't.
And a badge of honour. I think it is sort of like something in the back of our heads going, you know, I'll handle this person.
Yes, they won't do it to me. I can. Like, as if it's any reflection on us, if they are difficult or not, like, I can do this, and I, you know, as if you can change that person.
Whereas I know, it's actually, I'll shoulder this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then in the end, what happens is her decisions about what she's going to do are kind of made in reaction to his behavior. And it's her struggle of feeling like she's allowing him to bully her. And again, it's that, like, her, as if it's her responsibility. And, you know, she's kind of ends up avoiding a work event because she doesn't want to see this person.
Yeah, which, like, as you say, like, some of these stories, they're not, you know, a huge narrative.
Yeah.
But they are describing the kind of microaggressions that we've just been absorbing for decades.
Exactly.
You know, women, marginalized people in general, you know. I enjoyed the writing very much because it actually really brought the kind of issues alive with like an almost, it feels almost like a short story to sort of to read in on. And she talks about being on a panel with him in a professional capacity in front of an audience, obviously. And you know, completely apropos of almost nothing, you know, she'd made a point, you know, as her, in her professional capacity at this event, and he leaned forward and kind of almost like offered validation to the audience for her, leaned forward saying, I've worked with a lot of people and there's a lot of idiots, but she is to be trusted. Her work is good, which on the face of it, that's a perfectly nice sentiment. But then you're going, but you've really actually disempowered me a bit.
Totally.
By
kind of implying that I needed to be validated by you. And I also thought, it was an attempt at kind of love bombing as well, which you often find with that kind of character where they come full on you and you're amazing, and then they switch. But exactly, like, he had completely undermined her.
Kind of a sort of like...
Don't worry, guys.
I've got this. Don't worry. You can listen to her. I know she's got a vagina, but
she's actually. I've seen her working.
Yeah, it's this very, very subtle undermining.
Yeah,
and that's the stuff I think that, like, you know, we're kind of, what are we, like, we're post fourth wave feminism at this point, and it's the kind of real nitty gritty. We're getting granular.
Yeah.
And obviously there's still very big issues regarding women's rights and the rights of people on the margins, but there's also the unpicking such a kind of, you know, the sort of atmosphere of sort of ambient sexism that we're all living in.
And I think one of the lovely things with Rogue in general, and one of the things I think we all wanted in creating it, was the fact that we were creating a platform where stories that might not fit into existing mainstream grids.
Yeah.
Because we can kind of, within reason, kind of do what we want. So within that context, with Anon, you know, it's not necessarily every month going to be a story that involves maybe a gender dynamic or, you know, a kind of some where there's been a trauma or abuse at the hands of another. Like, I'm speaking to one woman who went back. It's about coming back to work and to life after a serious illness and eventually changing her life around. And that kind of, like, so sometimes it'll be things that, you know, you don't want to necessarily talk about in your own name and it's personal, but I'm finding when I go to ask these women, it's a yes, because they do want to talk about it in some way.
And they are experiences worth examining.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, I think that's it. You see, say, like, for example, with the first Anon, The Difficult Man, their interactions did escalate quite significantly from that panel. And, like, he did start to publicly bully her and things like that. And that was a very, you know, I think, big aggressive interaction that they had. But equally, as you said, it doesn't have to be that big story. And that's the thing that kind of, say, a mainstream outlet will kind of always need, really, from women telling their stories.
Totally. And it's that, you know, I was describing to somebody that said, oh, it's the kind of thing that we talk about ourselves on a night out. And it's that, there's that as well. It's that kind of, you know, the stuff you other women will get instantly.
Yeah.
But maybe isn't. Yeah. And some of them, like, there's,
I was just thinking, like, what a fun night out that is. It's just us just absolutely excavating.
Yes, exactly.
But it is the kind of thing that you come across in, like, the bathroom toilets.
Yeah.
Wasn't it very recently there was a story of a woman crying in the toilet beside another woman.
Yeah.
And it really, it seemed to speak massively to so many women everywhere. Mm. But it is that kind of, like, the undefinables in our lives, the things that we tell ourselves are not even worthy of our.
Exactly.
You know, our pain or our upset.
Yes. And you know, I think,
or we're not kind of.
That's it.
Victim enough here or something.
Yeah. This isn't. Exactly, that this isn't enough to feel.
I know, which is madness, because if you're upset about something,
that's it.
It doesn't in any way devalue somebody else being upset about something worse or the same or whatever. You know, it's an emotional relativism that's kind of been, like, fed, I think, to women.
Yes, very, totally.
Quite aggressively.
And I think a lot of these things are going to be maybe reflections of situations where women are in situations that they are. In a grid or a structure that wasn't made for them. So we have, say, the woman who's returning to work after an illness, but this will also, I think, mean something to a lot of women returning after having a child, that there's so much of our lives that we're meant to pretend isn't happening. We just have to kind of snap back in. I'm talking to another woman who had to leave when her application for flexible working was refused. So it's all those kind of things where we're kind of bashing up against a kind of structure that doesn't suit us.
Totally, yeah.
And these
wasn't
are
built
the
for us.
Yeah, exactly. And we're meant to kind of, you know, be more man, and we're not men. And I think maybe that is something that will be, you know, a source then of a lot of our stories.
Yeah. Well, I really look forward to
Thanks
more
so much.
Of Anon.
Lovely.
I feel I should re-record that because it's just too grotesque. Oh, thank you very much for joining us. And yeah, catch up with all of Rogue Collective at www.roguecollective.ie. Subscribe and receive a beautifully curated issue every Sunday. So what are you betting to this week? And what are you putting in the bin?
I'm taking something out of the bin.
Oh, nice.
This guy's
been in there long?
Yeah. Everybody has put this guy in the bin.
Okay.
Not me. This guy, it's Adam Sandler. He did a stand-up for Netflix that was fucking amazing. It might not have been on Netflix. He did a recent stand-up tour. It was sort of his comeback kid after all the bullshit movies. Bullshit movies that he made a fucking fortune off the back of. So fucking go make your shit movies. He did a brilliant stand-up. It was, I thought it was just brilliant. Go check it out.
Is it literally out this year?
Might have been last year. Yeah, it's a couple of years. Really loved it. I did. So when I saw the upcoming movie, Uncut Gems, I thought, I am fucking getting into this. Now, it came with loads of like a river
adulation
of everyone saying it was fucking brilliant. And it is, in my opinion,
shite.
Brilliant.
Oh,
Sophie.
I had to turn it off.
I loved every tiny morsel of it. I ate up, loved every fucking second of it. Loved it.
I just came away so baffled.
I just came.
You just came. I just...
Baffled?
It just killed my boner completely.
Why?
I will admit I didn't last beyond 20 minutes.
Big mistake.
I said, fuck this, I'm going back to YouTube. I'm going to watch some tiny homes.
Get back in there.
All I've heard from everyone is that it's absolutely stunning and that it was very stressful to watch.
Oh, it's high anxiety. But it's high anxiety in a safe world, you know. We're not talking about finding buried children anywhere. It's sort of a
fun... See, that's my safe zone.
I know. It's a really fun romp.
That's my comfort
watch. I just thought it was great crack. Like, it was a bit behind the pillow. It's like, I can't fucking believe it moments. But I thought it was sensational.
I loved it. It's really passed me by.
And it was just Adam Sandler. Like, I can't remember a single other actor in it.
And it's like being at a party where everyone is having the best night of their life. Dude, and you don't understand.
You stayed at the party for 15 seconds. Go back to the party.
On him though, I will say I've kept him out of the bin too for years now. Punch Drunk Love, I fucking loved. Have you ever seen that?
Can't remember.
It's one of his. He does the serious movie every 5 years.
Okay.
Pretty much, isn't it?
Now you're going to give it another whack. I think he should, so.
I don't know I can.
Oh, come on. It's great fun. I loved everything. It had a really famous costume director as well. I remember.
I did like some of the look of it, all right.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
That was the only thing keeping me there.
Oh, stop. I loved
everything.
Anyone
who wants to catch it hasn't. It's on Netflix.
So Adam Sandler, a Jewish diamond kind of dealer guy, shop in New York. And it's just fucking... Enough said. Go see it if you want to. Or don't.
Okay. A good film I watched this week is Beautiful Boy. So it's with Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet. Yeah, that everyone loves so much.
Let me get a Google. I've got to get a visual.
It
recent?
Recent last year. It's on Amazon Prime. Anyone who wants to watch it.
It sounds sad.
It was quite harrowing.
Oh, can't be dealing with that.
Because I'd already decided to spend my stay in hospital watching Ted Bundy content.
Right.
And then I watched a documentary about mothers with Munchausen's by proxy.
Oh, God.
And then I slid straight on over into Beautiful Boy.
Well,
and
was it? Did it satisfy? Is this a bit? Is this something you're giving us a positive?
In a positive, I loved it.
Okay,
I really did. I actually thought it was just like this really beautifully crafted film.
Like,
it's a true story, and it's based on a book that I read last year, and the book is by a journalist called David Sheff, and the book is also called Beautiful Boy, and it like chronicles his son's descent into meth and ultimately heroin addiction.
Jesus.
And it's just gorgeous.
Okay.
I loved the book as well when I read it, like it was about a year ago. I then went on to, so the son, the beautiful boy in question, Nick Sheff, is also a writer now. And I read his book as well. I will say I didn't like his as much.
Okay.
At all. But the dad's book was really good. And the film adaptation is simply stunning.
How much is too much Steve Carell? Because he's stuffed into every hole in my body. And to be honest,
he's very...
everywhere.
It's a very good performance.
Okay.
I think he's quite restrained in it. And Shimalamala is really good.
All right, what's his fucking name?
It's actually just so simple. It's Timothy
Shamala.
It's Timothy Shamalay.
Shamalamalam. It's just really fun to
say. It's just funner. Yeah. To say Shalalalamala. Wepam Shamalalamalam. So that was a really good film that I really enjoyed this week.
Stupendous.
So that's my bet into it. I was bet into it.
Nice.
I was also quite bet into the Munchausen's by Proxy doc, but that's really not for everybody.
Okay, maybe keep that one to yourself.
It's really fucking difficult and dark.
So Sophie didn't even
take... I could only watch it because I was holding a 5-day-old beautiful velvet baby.
Why did
and,
you...
And like I just had enough beauty in my arms that I could
sail on through
that darkness.
Okay.
Even though...
Why would you do it?
Me do it?
Live in the land of beauty while the before, you know... The nice newborn stage. Just wallow around in that.
Speaking of Land of Beauty, this is my other recommendation, bet into it, which is A Ghost in the Throat by Deira Ní Grifa. She is an Irish poet and she's just written this. This is her first like work of prose. I mean, it's a novel. It's like a novel that kind of like bends all the genres. Bends and blends the genres. Mm. So it's a little bit memoir, bit of novel. And it's really unique. It's gorgeous.
Wow.
So, A Ghost in the Throat for any readers out there.
Fabulous.
I've slipped into velvet on the mic. anything else? What I want to bin something. What's getting on my tits?
What?
Apart from just a little velvet baby. A lot. I don't have a lot of hate in me at the moment.
No.
As you can probably tell,
it's been a good
very full of feelings.
I'm going to put Justin Bieber in the bin after that performance.
I'll tell you what I'm going to put him in the bin, right? I'm going to put my mom in the bin.
Grant.
Just for a bit. Yep. Give her a little cooling off period. She has been doing the tragedy trawling to an epic level this week. And I'm looking at her going, what are you doing?
Oh, right.
So this is a very Irish trait. Presume everyone's got this. Somebody in their family, whoever it is, that kind of comes along. You're just about to have a normal, nice encounter and they're like, isn't it terrible about that child in Mayo? And you're like, no, didn't know anything about it. Don't want to.
Yeah.
Just shutting you off. Where's the mute? She's like, I mean, I won't go into it. I won't go into it. But I mean, you couldn't believe it, could you? And you're like, fucking fuck's sake. And you know she's just trying to offload it onto you until you're finally suddenly listening to a harrowing tale that you did not sign up for, you do not want. And that's what she brought to me in Hollis Street during her two visiting hour sessions.
So you got Bundy.
Session one was Caroline Flack, Mary's treatise on Caroline Flack for 2.5 hours.
Jesus.
Desperately sad, isn't it?
God.
And it's like, it is. Like, it is. We are sad, but also.
Not a member of your family.
Just live in this moment here for a minute.
It's a beautiful time.
Yeah. And then second night was this tragedy in Mayo. I mean,
no.
So she.
I don't know what that tragedy
what
is.
What do we call it? I think we call it tragedy trawling, isn't it?
It's bad.
Kind of like
it's an addictive thing. People get into it.
Tragedy porn of the kind of middle-aged Irish mother. So they love their tragedy porn.
Don't
and
they?
More power to them. Well.
Thanks for listening.
Honestly.
I can't believe we're here this week.
It's so fun, though.
Yeah, it's nice.
And thank you so much to everyone who's been subscribing. If you have not signed up to Rogue, maybe go check it out. There's some great stuff on site this week. We've got Louise Bruton going deep on her visit to LA and the Britney Spears experience. And she's also written just a really thoughtful piece in general about how the media treats the mental health of celebrities.
Mm.
So very pertinent timing on that.
Fabulous.
And we've got Leah Hines, who we spoke to earlier. She's written a piece about co-sleeping and kind of judgment in motherhood, which I think is
apt.
Very apt. So yes, and remember to rate and review the Vulture Club and like us, subscribe to us
if you want to. Thanks a mil. See you next week. Bye bye.